Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
The Citadel said at least 3 to 4 potatoes were lost.
Russ Dellinger.
Grizzly Stadium, baby. The pod was at the Grizz.
And SI's Pat Forty.
The Albuquerque Tinkler.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Machine Gun Kelly playing Country Roads, covering Country Roads on the big noon kickoff before a delirious crowd in Morgantown. We're back, Mr. baby.
We are off and running.
We are back. That I was like, all right, this is rolling. That was great. Scenes were great all weekend from Colorado. All the way through to whatever the last game was. Arizona was playing. I think that was probably later. I will not belabor this point, but I told you so. Maybe next year's the year that everyone stops liking college football because of NIL. Maybe it's next year. I don't
know. When the revenue sharing arrives, everybody will
stop
watching.
Is that it? They're going to hate it then?
That's it.
Yeah. Whole lot of people told you. The sky was falling. I saw the sky falling on full stadiums. I'm sure the TV ratings are great. I think it was 5 million plus for the Colorado North Dakota State game, which was a good game.
Wow. 5 million for an FCS opponent.
It's a good game.
Yeah, it's wild.
But yeah, I mean,
a very good game.
Sports booming. Yeah. If you listen to people tell you it was going to die 3 or 4 years ago, maybe stop listening to them. It's not falling apart. Mm-hmm. Might be falling apart in Clemson, South Carolina, or falling down
Gainesville, Florida.
Gainesville, we'll get into that. This is the overreaction. We do it every week.
Oh yeah.
You guys were both at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. We got a ton to get to today, so we're gonna get right into it. Believe me, when I'm not taking time to tell you how right I am, you know we're busy. That's a surefire sign we got a packed show. You're both there in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. This was a referendum game. Clemson is one of 4 schools that refuses to take a transfer last year. The other 3, Army, Navy, Air Force. Georgia, they'll take transfers. They'll take anything they can. They had 3 touchdown receptions by transfers. This was a referendum game on what William Christopher Sweeney is doing. Ideally, his system would work great, and it would be terrific. I appreciate it. Final score, 34-6.
34-3.
Sorry. Didn't he screwed that up. 34-3.
Don't give him an extra field goal, Dan.
Georgia sure wouldn't.
Nope.
Pat, what is happening?
Oh, it was... this was a repudiation, a train wreck, Dabo, you know, has carved a successful career out of stubbornly believing in himself and in the way he does things. And it's worked spectacularly. He's won 2 national championships. He's been to the playoff a million times. He's won the ACC a million times. But he's outdated. I'm not saying it's over, but it's trending heavily towards over for him as an elite coach. This was a complete beatdown by somebody who is at the top of the game. There's only 3 active coaches that have won national championships, and one of them was Mack Brown in 2005. The other 2 are Dabo, who's won 2, and Kirby Smart, who has won 2. And with Nick Saban out of the mix, guess who is the undisputed king of college football? It's Kirby Smart. Sure isn't Dabo Sweeney. This was a very, very bad loss for them. Georgia is excellent. Let's get that out of the way. I was saying Ohio State probably number 1, Georgia number 2. After seeing them play, I'm saying Georgia number 1. But at the same time, Clemson used to be able to compete with teams that were ranked 1 or 2. And now that was a non-competitive performance by them. They have slipped, and I don't know how they get back up unless Dabo Sweeney's willing to acknowledge his way isn't working as well as it was, and we got to mix it up to a significant degree.
You know, I think Pat would probably agree to an extent that virtually any transfer would have changed the result of the game, maybe would have changed the score. But I think it's just, you know, when you look at not just the one game, but the last three or so seasons and several other games that they've competed in, Clemson, and been similarly dominated, maybe not in the margin, because that was the biggest margin, I think, in 11 years for a Dabo Swinney coach Clemson team. When you look at the last three or four years and where Clemson is, and it's not the place that it was in 2019 and 2020, those years. And maybe that's because it's missing its defensive coordinator, Brent Venables. Maybe that's because it's missing an All-American quarterback, right? No Trevor Lawrence. No Deshaun, you know, so there's a lot of missing pieces there. And I think David Hale of, the ESPN mentioned this Sunday morning. I think it is accurate. Like the transfer thing is kind of a red herring for Dabo. There's a lot of other things going on, but it's a good, at least example, the lack of the transfer situation in not changing with this transformational, transactional time in college athletics, and how everybody else around you is changing and you're not. We saw it on the field with Georgia receivers, you know, scoring touchdowns who are transfers. And we see it all the time. We saw it across the college sports on Saturday. And I think if you talk to a lot of people in college athletics, I wrote this in the column from Atlanta, but you'll hear from people that, you know, what Dabo is doing is, preserving what the game used to be, right? And keeping your high school, recruiting high school, keeping them, developing them, et cetera, not pushing them out, not replacing your players that you sign with transfers. And so people respect that in a way. But when others around you are replacing players that you may have missed on with better players who are more experienced, you're going to get passed up. And I think partly that's what's happened. But there's one more other thing here I want to mention. And that is when you look at the composite of talent in the recruiting rankings, Clemson is talented. It has a talented roster. And so you wonder if all these other pieces that have been missing, maybe like a All-American quarterback or like a really good defensive coordinator that we saw in Venables or something, is the real reason. Or maybe it's just all these things put together.
It's hard to maintain as well. Like they got that program so high. Two titles, top two or three programs in the country. And it is hard to maintain. And so at some point things just start to slide a little bit. It's natural. Didn't happen with Saban, but that's about it. Everyone else, it's hard to maintain. And so maybe there's a little bit of that. Like you said, he's lost his coordinators. Elliott up in Virginia, too. He's maybe get set in your ways. Maybe you just don't work quite as hard. You think you do, but it's just so, are you maniacal, right? And so you got that. The transfer portal I do, it's the obvious carrot for all of us. But that said, like, other than Alabama, no one has recruited as well as Georgia the last 5-6 years. And yet, Kirby Smart sitting there going, well, we're going to grab this guy. We're going to grab, like, he's aggressive. And if you're not being aggressive, it's tough for the fans to really go and say, are we really all in on trying to win? And so that's what he's got to answer. And Georgia looked fantastic. And once they wore Clemson down, that second half was just, they overwhelmed them, which is generally what's going
to
happen.
They started to air it out too, right? They started to finally go down the field a little bit.
Kirby is not a big portal guy himself. And he said, quote I used in my story from him, if you give me every kid I sign, they stay at my program for 4 years and they can't leave, I would take that every day of the week. But if we're going to lose kids, we've got to replace them. It's a forced situation. You have to use it. I saw Bo Collins making big-time catches for Notre Dame, Clemson transfer, last night. They need players on offense. They may have been highly recruited. They may have had five stars, like the quarterbacks who continue to go to Clemson to die. DJ Uiagalelei and now Cade Klubnik. We are 4 years into five-star guys starting at quarterback for them and them having a bad offense. So what's going on there? Garrett Riley arrived at $1.75 million to be the coordinator after leading TCU to lighting up America in 2022. Now they can't move the ball. They can't score. So something is happening when people get to Clemson. It is not translating to an effective, exciting offense. And Ross, you mentioned that Georgia opened it up in the second half. I'm not sure whether Clemson ever really opened it up. They threw a couple deep shots, but I heard from a very prominent former quarterback at halftime of that game who was pretty disgusted with both teams. It's like, we got returning starting quarterbacks with talent, and all they're doing is throwing bubble screens. It's like, when is somebody going to throw the ball down the field? Georgia did. Georgia opened it up because they got a stud at quarterback. Clemson, I don't know what they're going to do.
No, the most surprising thing has been the last couple of years has been the acquisition of Garrett Riley at offensive coordinator in combination with Cade Klubnik, this highly rated quarterback. And these two things were supposed to be, you know, were supposed to bring Clemson's offense kind of back to where we had seen it. And it hasn't, just hasn't worked. I saw a stat from Larry Williams, covers Clemson, longtime Clemson beat writer. And I think under Garrett Riley, the yards per play or for Clemson, you know, the last whatever 14 games is lower, you know, than when it was under Brandon Streeter, who was, of course, let go and is now quarterback's coach, I think, right, for Georgia, actually. That's interesting. And that's something we haven't seen it come through fruition. And you know, yesterday was another kind of dismal performance by the Clemson offense. And you can only ask your defense to hang around so long. And they did for roughly 2.5 quarters, Clemson's defense. And you can only ask so much if you can't move the ball consistently. I mean, Clemson didn't crack, I don't think, 200 yards of offense.
It's on the field all the time, too. Georgia is all credit to them, too. Fantastic. Clemson has App State next and then NC State.
Not easy.
And what they really need next Saturday, if they're in there next Saturday and Appalachian State gives them a game, which I would expect, it's the negativity in the crowd, the boos, the grumbles, the right. They need like an FCS opponent. They beat 70-7 or something. Feel good. They need some feel good practices after that humbling. So they don't get it in the next 2 weeks. And App State is not the cure for what ails you. You never need those guys showing up. Pat, you mentioned Notre Dame. We're going to get to a lot of games here. 23-13 victory at Texas A&M. Plenty of things to say about the Irish. Maybe they weren't explosive enough offensively. Maybe too many penalties, lots of things. But this was a game Notre Dame usually loses somehow. They went into the SEC. It's 100,000 people screaming at them. The humidity is 101%. They gut it out. Offensive line, it looked like the offensive line got, like, flipped the switch somewhere late in the second half and all of a sudden became this really dominant unit. The secondary is terrific and they were able to blitz late. And then there's Riley, nasty secondary. Fantastic defensive performance by Notre Dame. They are athletic. They have got some players. And you watch, Texas A&M has talent, and Mike Elko is going to get that thing together. No question on the talent at Texas A&M. Maybe not at every position, but there's a lot of Notre Dame did not take a back seat, athlete for athlete. And then there's Riley Leonard at quarterback, the Duke transfer. How in the world did he not sign with Notre Dame originally? This is the most Notre Dame player I think I've ever seen. Unless he had he was pure Irish and came from Brooklyn or something, or the south side of Chicago or what. Like, that's where that guy wins the game after and he's reciting Bible verses about being humble, which, Pat, maybe you should dust off that Those, you know, maybe take a page from that.
Duly noted.
Just saying.
You're the one that wanted to start off the show by telling everybody how right you were.
And then I stopped because I listened to Riley Leonard.
There you go. The humility shown through.
I am learning. This is the Irish QB. I don't know if he can last running the ball like this, but oh my. He should have had that. They won't let the QR code on his little helmet. If he did, he'd be Elon Musk this morning. I don't know. Pat, thoughts on the Irish and how significant this victory is, even if it's not. I know they didn't beat Georgia. I know they didn't beat Ohio State, but they did something Saturday.
Yeah, it feels big. It feels important, I think, for Marcus Freeman and for the whole program, because you're right that in recent years this has been a game they've maybe found a way to lose. Certainly last year, the Ohio State game, which they found a way to lose. So to go into a hostile atmosphere and to not play great, but to find enough things right. Defensively, they were outstanding. Secondary, yes, is elite. They tackle, they hit. You know, that was both teams really wanted to kind of slug it out. And Notre Dame was the more effective slug it out team at the end. They enforced their will on A&M in the last quarter. You know, they had the big drive for the touchdown, and they were able to rip off some big runs. And I just thought that they showed a level of toughness there, you know, and I guess maybe really belief in themselves, like this, we're going to do it this way, and we can do it, and we're going to win, that hasn't always been present. So I think it was a big win for Marcus Freeman, a big win for the players. They had, you know, 9 million penalties, and the freshman left tackle, Anthony Knapp, certainly got his baptism of fire in college football, but he's going to end up being a good one. The offensive line's is a work in progress, but they showed me something, and they've got a schedule that I think, boy, they're set up. They're in a really good position. I would not be shocked at all if they have no more than one loss at the end of the year, and they're in that playoff for sure.
Ross is dealing with some technical problems there at his hotel in Las Vegas. That's what he's saying. I thought I heard the craps dealer in the background. It's called Hi Ho Low.
I'm in Las Vegas too with no technical issues.
Yeah, he's technical. I heard a slot machine dinging. Waitress. Yeah. I don't know. That's what he's claiming. Wi-Fi is not good at the blackjack table at Aria. Anyway, we'll continue without him. So if you were looking for his insight, and you probably weren't, but if you were, look, Notre Dame is in the driver's seat. They got Northern Illinois at Purdue, Miami, Ohio, home, Louisville, home, at Stanford, Georgia Tech, Navy, FSU, Virginia. This is all at home. Army in New York City, and then they're at USC. 11-1 is obviously going to get them in the playoff. Maybe 10-2. I don't know. But they're in very, very good shape. They got to keep Riley Leonard upright. Do not run him that many times. But there's some games they're not. This may have been their hardest game. We'll see what A&M does. But that was not easy down there. So
No. That, again, that was an impressive win. The way they did it, and it's going to look good on the resume, unless A&M flat out stinks, which I don't think they will. I don't think they're great by any stretch. But I think a road win over a probably top half of the SEC team's gonna carry well.
Yeah, and I love Marcus Freeman's aggressiveness. The announcers were kind of startled with him going on everything for fourth for a while there, but I thought he was just trying to take over the game, and I think he trusts his defense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was a big part of it.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to score, so I'm going to keep running. I'm going to keep going, and the longer I keep their guys out on this hot field, the better. So I liked an awful lot. If I'm an Irish fan, I'm very, very excited right now. That was that you got the win. Stop looking for reasons to not be happy. 1980s revival, or even much later than that. But Miami Hurricanes.
Hey.
We talked about this being this was going to be the darkened room drawing bubbles off a bottle of Jack game for one of these coaches. clearly, it was Billy Napier sitting in the dark.
Yeah.
Terrible performance by Florida, but I want to start with Miami. And this is why I picked them to win the ACC. They got so much talent. That team looked fast. They looked physical. They were ferocious. They hit hard. Damian Martinez and Mark Fletcher, terrific running back combo. And Cam Ward looked really good. Wasn't perfect, but 385, three TDs. The O-line was good. That's a crystal ball special. The Canes are in the driver's seat for the ACC after one game. This was terrific. No matter how bad Florida played, Miami looked, I mean, they cooked them. This looked great.
The only team that so far has looked impressive, flat out impressive to me from the ACC is Miami. And that was it. They dominated the game, and they are dynamic offensively. Got playmakers. You named some of them. Xavier Restrepo, the receiver, was great. And Cam Ward, yeah, you can see why there were people bidding heavily to get him, because he can absolutely make stuff happen. I talked to some people out from the late, great Pac-12 within the last week, and they were like, oh, yeah, Cam Ward was as good a quarterback as we saw last year, and he certainly looked that way in the first game. That was a big, big performance, I think, by him and by them. And, yeah, then there's the flip side of it and the absolute.
Let's get negative.
Yeah,
it's okay.
You know, it comes naturally. I mean, the quote from Billy Napier kind of summed it up. I mean, it's embarrassing, to be quite honest with you. That's how I feel. That's how our kids feel. We've got a decision to make. There's no excuses. Keep our mouths shut. Show up and work. We have to do better. They have to do better immediately, and they have to do a lot better. I mean, this could not have been really a worse start to a must-win season for a coach.
Yeah, this is like exactly Yeah, thank good to be back. we'll see how long the lovely Vegas Wi-Fi works here. The desert, Dan, the desert. I really thought that you know, this would be a tight game and an intense tight game that would come down to the final play. I didn't expect like Florida's offense to be some world beater, but I expected their defense to be better. And maybe it's just because Miami's offense looks like Dan said, man, look, they are cooking. I mean, they are explosive. I think like three receivers had at least 70 yards. You know, Restrepo looked amazing. Xavier Restrepo, they did. They looked really good. And I was expecting Florida to slow them down a little bit more than that. And, you know, yeah, now it's, we talked about it on my hot seat story a few weeks ago, right? The leader of that hot seat story was Billy Napier. And, you know, it's year three. It's a $25, $26 million buyout. And already that's certainly a topic of conversation, because this is the last thing that he needed, right? Like, this is the worst thing, was this game to get out of hand like it did.
Yeah, I didn't see it getting this. I thought, hey, you lose, but this was non-competitive. 261 yards of offense, 71 was on a single carry. There was nothing there. And this pays dividends in recruiting, like in-state recruiting, Miami and Florida. You'd go into their place and humiliate them like that. Dan Mullen was retweeting a post that said the last UF coach, who was that be? The last UF coach went to three New Year's Six bowl games in his first 3 years and then was fired in his fourth. Salty Dan Mullen. We like it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
a little bit of context needed there, right?
Going to three New Year's Six bowls is, it's a lot. Or not, but it's better than what they got going now. Also, Napier had to take over that program, right? Last year, Napier had like a killer recruiting class all season they could point to. It looked like Florida's going to have a top two or three recruiting class. It ended up 15th. They did get G.J. Lagway, who played at the end of this game and looks like a superstar. But you're going to have to keep him. I know it's week one, but, you know. But at the end of the recruiting cycle, they lost top 100 guys to Auburn, a couple to Texas, one to Georgia. Like, it fell apart late, and your top 15 recruiting class sounds good unless you're in the SEC. And so with this schedule coming, you got A&M, you got so much early, UCF still, and then you've got the Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, Texas, LSU, and Ole Miss, and then FSU. Like, I don't know if he can survive. Like, how long can we start the Lane Kiffin to Gainesville? Is that fair now? When does that start officially?
Yeah, go ahead.
Started in the summer for some people. It certainly was linked.
I'm sure there'll be some links. I don't know. I have no idea, but let's do reckless gossip. No, I have no idea, but that would be who I would be looking at. This is just a mess. So I don't know where Florida goes with this, but this was worse than I would have expected because it was embarrassing, and I was surprised by it.
The new president down there, who was the old president, you know, the interim president came back after Ben Sass stepped down, is Fox, who we talked about a few weeks on the show. There's a video of him, I think, from Matt Baker of the Tampa Bay Times, of Billy Napier walking off the field after the loss to, like, what looks like a smiling President Fox, who shook his hand and kind of gave him a hug and stuff. And the replies to the tweet with the video will entertain you for a good bit.
The other video that came out of the game, the post game, did you see Napier at the podium?
Trouble with the bottle of water.
Yeah, he could not get the top off of the bottle of water.
Been there.
You know what? Yeah, I same here. I cannot cast aspersions upon him for that.
But this is a tough day
all around.
It gets bad when like that becomes a thing, right?
Right. Yeah. Those things become a thing.
I feel bad for a lot of these guys. I saw a video of like a player. I'm not even going to do it to him because it's not, I'm trying to be very positive to the players, but like he didn't have a great game and they're just showing him walk off and it becomes like a video that, I don't know, like these guys put out, they work hard, they play, and maybe they don't do so well. Do we have to watch a video of them like slump off disappointed?
Right.
I don't know. I'm clearly like screaming into the wind on this, but it's like, are we just humiliating them? You know, our coach can't open a water bottle, but it's like everything's about catching some video that makes somebody look bad. And it's like, maybe the guy's just walking off the field. He had a tough night.
Yeah.
But
how would you feel walking off the field at that?
What is he supposed to? I was like, what is he supposed to look like? You know, and everyone's like, he sucks, this, that. I was like, I don't really understand the point of this, but other than engagement is everything. All right, we'll be back right after this. Talk some more football. All right, one of the other big scenes was Penn State, West Virginia. Penn State won the game handily, 34-12. Drew Aller looked pretty good. Not great, but he had some moments. Again, I've said this before. I think the storyline of this season is, do you build off the guy you had or do you bring in someone new? These quarterback. This is the two philosophies. Drew Aller has a lot of potential. Does he get better? He was good enough against West Virginia. It poured rain. The game kind of fell apart for West Virginia. They didn't play that well. And like people had to abandon the stadium. That said, I think this was a massive success for West Virginia just having this game. Obviously, they would have wanted to win, but said we had Machine Gun Kelly performing, you had Big Noon Kickoff there. Pat McAfee hosted a wild like show on Friday. Now I understand why they shut down the schools.
Donating $1 million to the NIL fund there in Morgantown.
Donated $1 million. So we're already doing better there. The scenes were just incredible. And I think we all love West Virginia. It is a super cool and uniquely cool place. And so it's fun when everyone sees what it is about, even if you're not at Penn State's level, which not that many teams are at Penn State's level. So I thought it was a successful weekend for West Virginia, despite the result. But I think if you're a Penn State fan, you're feeling pretty good saying, hey, we walked into the biggest weekend they've had in a while. And won this game pretty handily. Pat?
Yeah. I think you're feeling very good if you're Penn State. That you got immediate returns on your new offensive coordinator. Drew Aller, 12.7 yards per attempt, higher than any game he had last year. You know, they could not throw downfield with any success last season. First game here, and it's not a first game against an FCS opponent or a MAC opponent or whatever. It's a Big 12 school coming off a good year with a lot of optimism. And they lit him up with some big plays. Harrison Wallace, a big receiving game for him, making a couple of big plays down the field. Amari Evans had some, too. I mean, so you're seeing a vertical passing game. You're seeing at least a creative enough offense that you're opening up the field and getting some opportunities to hit some shots, and they did. And so I thought that was very positive for a fan base that's been tired of watching their team show up either conservative or just outgunned offensively for the last several years.
This game went on when Pat and I were covering the Georgia Clemson game, but we had it on the iPad, and so we were watching it here and there. And every time I feel like I went back to it to watch, Aller was making some pretty awesome throw and showing off that big arm. And it's funny because when I was watching the A&M game, I was going back and forth on the Spirit of Wi-Fi. And every time I went back to the A&M game, Connor Wegman was let's say, not making some great throw. But Aller, you know, they have the new offensive coordinator there. Andy Kotelnicki was at Kansas as kind of a Lance Leopold disciple. And, man, they look good. And Aller looked great. He even ran the ball, I think, for close to like 50 yards on the ground. He had some good big scrambles. Got 100 yards from Singleton at running back. Man, he showed it off. I thought it was impressive as of any kind of performance on week one for Penn State, going on the road, kind of a hostile environment there, and really just dominating that game. If you exclude maybe Georgia and Miami, I think he was probably the most impressive kind of week one that anybody had. And now I think it gives Penn State fans, something to look forward to here. Maybe you have the team that can not only, win that 9-10 games that you've been winning, but get over that hump to the 11-12-13 mark. We've said it before on the podcast, Penn State is one of the teams who in a expanded playoff would have been in more than anybody over the last 10 years if the playoff had been expanded. They would have been in, I think, like four or five times over the last 10 years. So they're sitting right there. The team I saw on Saturday gets in and has to go play a road game. Think about this. I mean, if Penn State, were like a 9, 10, 11 seed, which they would have been in a lot of years, the last 10 years, and they would have to play on the road. The team I saw, yesterday could play on the road and handle a hostile environment in the playoffs.
Really good chance they're 5-0 heading into a stretch in middle of the season where they're at USC, at Wisconsin, and then Ohio State visits in what should be kind of defining of their season, that heart of the year. So they've got a great win, and then Bowling Green, Kent State, Illinois, UCLA to kind of, we'll see what kind of fight. Maybe Illinois is a little bit tougher than the others, but some time to tune up over the next 5-6 weeks here. It's pretty good. It's nice when you get that first win out of the way. Shocking result of the day had to be Vanderbilt holding off. They had a big lead. Then they hold off. Virginia Tech comes back to force overtime. And then at the end of it, the Commodores get it done with a huge win, 34-27. Our man, Diego Pavia, the New Mexico State transfer, known for his...
What does Pat call him? The New Mexico Tinkler.
The Albuquerque Tinkler.
Yes.
Yes.
How committed is he to the team? He went into the rivals' practice facility and peed on their logo.
It's the most you can ask for, Dan.
It really is. It really is. This is no fake. It wasn't that fake like dog pee celebrate. This is the real thing.
No. Yeah. Giving your bodily fluids up for the program.
190 yards, two touchdowns throwing, 95 and a score running. You saw the grit that it takes to do that. Diego Pavia, big win for the Commodores. Not good for Virginia Tech. We were hoping a little better out of. I think they're the only double-digit favorite to lose outright over the weekend. So, I don't know. It's Vandy, that was a little that's not the one they wanted at the ACC.
No, that was, I said, like the Miami again, I think, was the only ACC school that really showed something positive. Other than Georgia Tech, which beat another ACC school, and that was week zero. But yeah, that was really bad for Virginia Tech. And I, of course, had started to imbibe the Kool-Aid after my SMU pick looked shaky. I got off of that and then got on the Virginia Tech hype train, and that immediately went off a cliff. So I'm red hot.
We're on ACC. a third ACC championship pick. Who is it, Pat? Yeah. Who is it?
Canes. Got to be the Canes. Yeah,
come over to me. Yeah. Come to Papa here. Yeah. Come on.
This was just a huge win for Clark Lee. You know, he's in his fourth year at Vanderbilt. They really went off course last year. They went 2-10 and kind of looked like the Vanderbilt team were often used to seeing. And you know, Dan brought up a great point. The story of the year, at least on the field, is did you stick with your former quarterback or did you go into the portal and get what may be considered an upgrade? And some programs stuck with their quarterback. Clemson, Cade Klubnik struggled last year and Clemson stuck with them. There's plenty of other examples of that. And then you have the Vanderbilts, the Ohio States, who decided to go to the transfer market, and boy, it paid off. Just really big, big performance here in a big year for Clark Lee at Vandy. And you look at their schedule, and they should be favored the next couple weeks. So they'll be 3-0. You would think they'll be 3-0 going to Missouri.
Two great quotes in Big Ten quarterback preseason. One worked out, one quite didn't. Aiden Childs, Michigan State quarterback, so confident in his team's offense, said, "If you bet, take the over." Jeez. The over would have been over 48.5. Michigan State won 16-10 against Florida Atlantic.
Yeah.
Good reason to not bet.
That's right.
They'll work it out. We're not down on you. It's okay to make bad picks. We've all done it. Welcome to the race of the case. Then there was Nebraska QB Dylan Raiola, who said, "Buckle up," to an already ecstatic Nebraska fan base. And he came out 19-28, 238, two touchdowns in the Huskers' 40-7 win over the mighty Miners of UTEP. Raiola looked really good. I don't know, man. You guys may not have seen much of this, but just the way he throws the ball, the way he holds himself, the way he cares, it's like, this is a true freshman. This is a big-time prospect here. Nebraska has got their guy. It was UTEP. But it's like when Lagway got in that game at Florida-Miami. You're just like, oh, okay, here we go. Like, you can just see the talent and the poise and the training that he has. This is no nervous freshman. This kid is like, bring it on. So Nebraska, we're going to talk a ton of Nebraska this week because they're playing Colorado next week. But the Raiola-Sanders quarterback matchup is going to be something else. And this guy is a true freshman. So any thoughts on either of those guys or anything else you guys want to jump in on something? Because we are trying to get a lot of.
Yeah, I didn't see any of the game against UTEP, but that was exactly the start that they needed. First of all, you got a pretty low stress opponent to roll your freshman quarterback out there and get him established, and now you got Colorado coming in, and I think, boy, that atmosphere is going to be unbelievable next week. But signs are good for Nebraska being where it wants to be and should be in year two. With Matt Rhule, now they got to back it up a little bit more in against some tougher competition.
Anybody else out there that impressed you? Pick a team, any team.
Oh, how about Boise's running back, Genty, Ashton Genty? I think Pat tweeted out, I thought it was a good point. You know, of all the retainments, we talk about the acquisitions of transfers over the offseason, the retainment of him, Boise retaining him and keeping off some of the big boys from getting him as a transfer was huge. He set records, 6 touchdowns rushing, over 260 yards, school record rushing yards as well. That was a really big time performance there. And I mean, the heck of a start to begin to crank up the rarity, right? Which is a group of 5 Heisman campaign.
Best player in the country, as coach said. Obviously, it goes without saying, but Ashton Genty is the best player in the country.
Boise goes State without coach. Saying, well,
Spencer Danderson, I mean, said, well, Travis Hunter and a few others might have a say. That's all right.
There's a few. Yeah.
Be bold, yeah. Broncos. He would have been my small sample Heisman. I'll come up with a new one. Pat, who else impressed you out there?
About the Pac-2? Pac-2 is the only undefeated conference. Oregon State rolled past Idaho State. Washington State really rolled on Portland State, scored 70, and they lost Cam Ward. The replacement quarterback, John Mateer, put up a 335.7 efficiency rating, 352 yards passing, 5 touchdowns on only 11 completions. It's crazy. So Pac-2, power. Good for you guys.
Iowa scored 40 points.
Yeah.
I know it was Illinois State, but still. I know it wasn't. We'll see. But they scored 40 points. And after years of everyone making fun of them for never scoring, and it took the second half, but they scored 40 points. So that was good. The other one, I was intrigued at this score. And we'll see how it plays out. But Arizona State beat Wyoming 48-7. And it should have been 48-0. Look, Wyoming's got a new coach. They got a new... It's tough to keep your talent up there. Obviously, it's not easy. Maybe they, but this is a pretty proud program. I got a hard time believing they're just terrible. And Arizona State, I think most people had them maybe picked last in one of the last teams in the Big 12. There's some clear life there in Kenny Dillingham's program. So I don't know quite what to make of that. I'm not going to overreact to either side, but that was pretty good by ASU.
Heck yeah.
That'll do it.
I wanted to mention, in terms of like hotshot freshmen, Jeremiah Smith, Ohio State. Ooh, baby. People said that by the time he was done with high school, he was supposed to be the number one recruit in the country. And Ohio State won a vigorous battle over like Miami, Florida, Georgia.
FSU.
Florida State. Yeah, yeah. And all I heard when I was up in Columbus in the summer, they're like, oh, Jeremiah Smith. And this is a program that, hey, they know good wide receivers. And he may not end up being Marvin Harrison Jr., but he's got the skill set and the talent. And his first game of college, 6 catches, 92 yards, 2 touchdowns. Look out.
Well, he physically just runs routes. And, yeah, they know great receivers, to say the least, at Ohio State. And this is obviously the next great one. I mean, just cracking that lineup as a freshman is a monster.
They got them stacked all over the place. And not only you crack the lineup, you're the leading receiver in your first game.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back right after this. All right, let's do a small sample Heisman. We don't like to wait to the end of the year to give out the Heisman. We love the Heisman, so we're going to hand it out every single week. You can win it each week. It's a small sample Heisman. Big honor for us. Ross, you got a small sample Heisman?
I do. And it was late night, and because I'm out west in Vegas, I got to watch a lot of the game from the blackjack table at the Cosmo. It was nice. But Arizona and New Mexico played, and every time I looked up Titeroa McMillan, receiver for Arizona, was catching a pass for like 50 yards. It was incredible. He ended up with a record, 10 catches, 304 yards receiving, averaging 30 yards a pop had four touchdowns. Just incredible. He was one of those with the quarterback, Noah Fifita, to stay at Arizona and not go with Jed Fish to Washington. And boy, early on, looking real, real good. You know, it was impressive. So how about that? 304 yards of receiving for one player. That's, you know, probably more than about, I don't know, 40 or 50 teams may have accumulated in offensive yardage in their, you know, week one matchups.
Heck yeah. That dude is a monster. He is big and fast and ball skills and everything. Dino Babers is now coaching out there at Arizona. And Dino sometimes can maybe hyperbolize a little bit. He said before the season, he said he might be the best player he's ever coached. And after that game, okay, maybe that wasn't hyperbole. He said, all right, so he's the first player in FBS history, according to Opta Stats, to have 10 receptions, 300 yards, 30 yards of reception, and four receiving touchdowns in one game. It's not a bad opener.
Not bad at all. Pat, you got one?
Oh, I do. I have too many small sample highs.
We can winners, hand out. You know what? It's the first week. We're all happy.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all happy. So I'm going creative here on this one, though. I am going to a James Madison tandem of players who produced, to me, the most entertaining single moment of the first week. And that is quarterback Alonzo Barnett and offensive lineman Joseph Simmons. And if you haven't seen the video of this, it's out there. Alonzo Barnett flops his way into a personal foul call against Charlotte. And he wasn't I would love to know the thought process here. He wasn't satisfied with just getting the flag. I think when he saw the flag, he's like, I'm going to keep going because this is going to go viral. There is no way this doesn't go viral. So he kept rolling over and flopping around like a fish in the bottom of a boat, you know, it's like trying to get back in the water and suffocating. And he finally ends up, you know, after like his third paroxysm, laying on his back. And then my man Joseph Simmons, the offensive lineman, goes over and does chest compressions on him like he's going to give him CPR. It was the greatest spontaneous comedy scene I've ever seen. So small sample Heisman for the Dukes.
And they covered my lock of the week.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
But I'm humble. I'm humble.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. You only got one then. Comedy
well, no,
act.
I got more, but I don't want to take you. You might have. I don't want to take.
You don't yours. Have mine. You don't have mine.
Okay.
I feel confident.
Then I'm going Travis Hunter.
Okay.
What if the Big 12 has the two best players in the country, Teteroa McMillan and Travis Hunter? Absolutely ridiculous performance again from Hunter. Really, maybe one of his best receiving performances. Maybe his best one. Seven catches, 132 yards, three touchdowns. Including one catch where I don't think he could possibly see the ball. He was basically being beheaded and reached up and somehow snagged it. And then, of course, defensively played, you know, 60 snaps at cornerback. He is absolutely in his own category of versatility and stamina. At least he has a coach that's willing to let him be as versatile and show the stamina that he has.
He's unbelievable. If he can do 100 snaps all year and survive it, that's my question. But he's incredible. His defensive back play was pretty good. My small sample Heisman, I'm going to give a nod. I'm not going to give the small sample Heisman to him, but the interception, the pick six by Will Johnson of Michigan against Fresno late in that game, he just breaks on the ball and in a full sprint, jumps the receiver, catches it, it just keeps going. It's like when you first watch football and you're seven and you're like, why don't they just run and catch it like that? It's impossible. And he did it. Yeah. I was just like, he caught that in full stride. It was like the pass was to him.
Yeah.
He just jumped a little out route and just gone. He stumbled, but then was gone. And he was so gone, he was basically just jogging in. That was an incredible play. Now, my small sample Heisman goes to Stephen F. Austin quarterback Sam Vidlak. I believe that's how you say it, Sam. I hope not to ruin your Heisman moment. Stephen F. Austin, you want efficiency? I want to see the QB rating on this. 8 for 8, 288 yards, 5 touchdowns.
Jeez.
That was his line. Stephen F. Austin, I always like Stephen F. Austin because you don't want to confuse it with like Stephen B. Austin or Stephen G. Austin or any others. You got to have that F in there. Stephen F. Austin, great American, by the way. Just a joke. They played something called North American University, an NAIA that has had some tough moments. I looked it up. I tried to find the campus on a map. It looks like it's in a hotel. It's like it's got a campus, but it looks like an old hotel. I once did a story to JUCO.
Where is it?
It's in Stafford, like outside of Houston.
Okay.
You know, business programs. I don't really know why they have a football team, but they do. I once did a story to JUCO in Kansas, and the JUCO was in an Ace Hardware. An old Ace Hardware. Yeah, like the building still had that like architecture of an Ace Hardware. Anyway, this was not a good game. Not competitive. Stephen F. Austin won 77-0. They led 70-0 at the half.
Oh, no.
And the teams decided that the third and fourth quarter would only be 5 minutes each.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't even know you could do that.
I mean, you can decide like on a running clock, I thought, but that's wow.
What does Vegas think of this? Like, I don't think you have to do what, like, maybe sports wagering is not legal in Texas, I imagine, but like, they had a 5 minute third quarter and a 5 minute fourth quarter. Game ended 77-0. Stephen F. Austin led the total yards 675-40.
Oh, no. Boy, that must have been fun to watch.
Big game. Back in 2022, Stephen F. Austin beat Warner, NAIA Warner College or something, whatever that is, 98-0. I think I remember talking. Yeah, I think this is a recurring thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Sam couldn't be better unless all 8 passes were touchdowns, I guess.
Yeah.
Because there's room for improvement. You only threw 5 of your 8 passes, 5 were touchdowns.
Wow. That is
so
nutty.
If you sat there and were like, man, that Ole Miss game was lopsided. Oh boy, what about, you know? I mean, a lot of teams look good against bad. Ole Miss, Mizzou, Tennessee look great, Kentucky, Bama, right. Auburn, right? But K-State, but no, not like that. Not like Stephen F. And then I looked up the North American University. Their sports info staff, they deserve a small sample Heisman for trying to spin this.
They had some spin?
Stallions. They're the Stallions. North American University Stallions. Not Connor Stallions.
That's where my mind went.
Of course it did.
Connor Stallions. We named him after Connor. Big fan.
How about Mugundy with a reference in his news conference to Stallions? How about that?
Yeah, perfect. He said, wait, I got that here. Yeah, they asked him about how the headset was working, the helmet communication. And he said, I can't. I guess their team won't let them. I don't know. I can't hear it. I can't. They won't let me hear it. If we get a good IT guy, maybe that one from Michigan, that'd be good. Even though he didn't do it.
Yeah, even though he didn't do it. I love that little.
Yeah. I don't think he was the IT guy, but okay.
Right. Gundy just kind of operates on his own plane.
Anyway, North American News, sports info staff, quality work. Stallions show resilience.
Ooh.
In tough season opening loss to SFA.
Only lost the second half 7-0.
Yeah.
Lasted 10 minutes.
Exactly. But. If you're the PR guy for a team that got beat like that, what do you write? Opening game concluded.
Yeah.
all right, we've said some mean things. Can we say something nice? Ross, are you capable of saying something nice?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Okay.
Forgot about to say
no,
something nice.
No, you can't.
Nice.
Pat, can you say anything nice? We'll give you a minute to think of something nice. It's the first week. Come on, people.
I know, not prepared.
Let's go.
At all.
This is we're not looking.
It's so unlike our normal.
This is why I don't want to hear like, well, you know, I heard boos at the beginning of the Ohio State game because they weren't immediately up 28-0 on Akron. Like, come on, let's relax. We're all working out the kinks here.
Yeah, I can say something nice.
Go ahead.
I just, you know, after the struggles that the Pac-12 had getting their games on TV where everyone could see them.
CW.
I was happy. I was so happy for Oregon and Washington in particular, the true murderers of the Pac-12, for, you know, getting their big shot, their big spot their spot in the spotlight, their moment in the sun, television, as Big Ten members now, right? Oh, wait, no. Oh, there was a distribution issue. Oh, no. Comcast and Xfinity didn't show the Oregon and Washington games, the parts of their area. Oh, the irony is thick. The irony is heavy in the Northwest. We had to get out of the Pac-12 because of a bad TV deal, and our first game in the Big Ten is blacked out in numerous areas. I feel so bad for the Ducks and the Huskies on that. Sorry.
Now that's the spirit of say something nice.
Yeah. Yeah, great. I'm trying to, how am I going to compete with that?
Well, that's why I let you go first.
You could say something legitimately nice.
Yeah,
I was going to actually say something legitimately nice. Although it's still tough to follow that from Pat. I was trying to find something that I could be cynical about. But I you know, Dan mentioned it, earlier, but Iowa's offense, we have given them quite a bit of crap on the show for a long time, and rightfully so. But finally, you know, they did get it together. Took the second half because the first like six possessions of Iowa's offense in that game against an FCS opponent were punt, field goal, punt, turnover on downs, punt, and none of the possessions lasted more than 30 yards. So they were heading toward, you know, more Iowa offense type production that we are used to. But they turned it on in the second half. They hit 40 points, as Dan said. I think McNamara ended up throwing, I feel like, for more yards, an Iowa quarterback threw for more yards in a single game in several years. It was, you know, multiple years. You have to go back maybe 3 years or so. It was the most yards or most most. Oh, here it is. He passed for three touchdowns, just three, which was the most in a single game by an Iowa quarterback since 2021. Three touchdown passes. Incredible. So that's my say something nice. Good job, Iowa. Keep it going.
All right, I'm going to say something nice to my new favorite tradition in college football, and that is the Low Country Boil Bowl. It is between the Citadel and Charleston Southern, which both are located in Charleston, South Carolina. And they are meeting up now annually for what they are calling the Low Country Boil Bowl, where they will play each other. The Citadel won 22-21 Saturday night. They got a sellout crowd over at Charleston Southern, which is not, it was not sizable. It was nine, it was four figures, but still, Citadel ended a 19 game win streak. And then they got the trophy and the reward. The trophy includes, symbols of each school, but also an actual like pot on it, which they filled with Low Country Boil.
Oh man.
That's a now good trophy. In the presentation of the trophy, some of it spilled out, estimated by the
got shrimp on the field.
Jay Sullivan, who's their PR guy down at the Citadel, said at least 3 to 4 potatoes were lost. It spilled out of the boil. This is like a Pop-Tart bowl, but with a low. I mean, this is some serious food. They do have a huge boil, shrimp, potatoes, corn, sausage, everything is in this pot, but then there's another pot and then all the players get to eat after the game. So they ate their fill after the trophy presentation. So you play the game, you celebrate Charleston, South Carolina, one of the great cities in this country, and somebody wins, and then everyone eats a Low Country boil, which everybody likes.
Oh, yeah. That is awesome.
Win, win, win.
I want to go to the game next year. I want to go.
Get down there. Maybe you could get the, not just the potatoes that fall out, but yeah. Forget dumping mayo. Let's just have a Low Country boil. This was genius. Good thinking, Citadel and Charleston Southern. The next year's game is at the Citadel, so that's a little bigger crowd can handle it. I expect a lot. I mean, that's quality. That's college football right there.
Love it.
So, and Citadel finally ended a losing streak, so good job. All right, that's our show. We will be back on Tuesday to talk the issues. We'll be back. This is our we tape this on Sunday as an overreaction. It should be out some point Sunday. Sometimes we tape early in the morning. Sometimes we tape a little later. Depends on everyone's travel. We will have LSU and USC reaction on Tuesday. We will have BC and FSU reaction. It's kind of an unusual weekend. And then we always do our race for the case on Thursday. So subscribe so you do not miss any of the thrilling action here at the College Football Inquirer. So your season is not complete without us. We complete you. We complete you. Continue to subscribe. Share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. Oh, also, shout out to the – I should have said this earlier. They deserve the small sample. The Montana Grizzlies.
Oh yeah. Grizzly Stadium, baby. The pod was at the Grizz.
We will talk more about this. I am sorry. This is all my fault. I should have started the show with this. But they remember a couple weeks ago, I said rather than risk what what Michigan State had to deal with when they had trivia up on their pregame scoreboard for the fans who got in early and get their seat. They were entertaining the fans with trivia, but then one of the trivia questions involved Hitler. And then a picture of Hitler flashed on the screen, upsetting many people. I said, put the College Football Inquirer on there. We are here for everyone.
Yeah.
And Nick Halisay and everyone out at Montana did it at Washington Grizzly Stadium. The pod played before the game.
It's unbelievable. One of our highest honors.
I think of nothing greater that's ever happened. It says Grizz football invites you to sit back and enjoy the sounds of the College Football Inquirer. So anyway, we're going to hype up Montana for this. Thank you. Anyone else wants to jump in, go right ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Go right ahead. You have our permission.
Big Sky, Missouri Valley.
Anyway, heck yeah, let's go big time. Bryant Denny, Ohio Stadium. Let's hit the masses here. So anyway, appreciate you, Grizz football. We'll keep talking about you. Anyway, talk to you guys later.